welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 273 of the podcast. And it is the 13th of June, 2016, as I record this. So today I have an interview with the lovely Claire Lydon, who is charming and smart and also gay. And we're talking about lesbian fiction. Now, you know, I try to keep the show upbeat and happy. But as I record this, yesterday there was a hate crime in Orlando in the US, where over 50 people were shot at a LGBT nightclub. And we recorded this interview weeks ago, Claire and I, and it was always scheduled for today. But because of the topic, I just wanted to acknowledge, you know, how terrible the Orlando shooting is and the fact that I personally stand with the gay community at this difficult time. So this is a very upbeat and happy interview, and Claire really is just wonderful and writes lesbian romance. So we talk about writing romance. Doesn't really matter what your sexual orientation is. People love each other. That's just the way it goes. Back to the upbeat portion of the show. So I'm just back from London after a weekend on a screenplay editing course, and my head is kind of exploding. These screenplay courses, and I've done quite a lot now, to be honest, they are fantastic for breaking down elements of story to a structural level. And film and TV, of course, is a very condensed experience for the viewer, and you don't necessarily go inside people's heads unless you show it on the screen. So it's very, very good for novelists, I think, to learn how screenplays and screenwriting is done, and then you can incorporate it into your own novels. So again, I come back with just about 40 pages of notes and books and ideas, and I still do want to sort out my own screenplays, but I realised while I was there that they need so much work, I might as well start from scratch. But I can definitely incorporate what I learn into the next novel, which at this point will probably be End of Days, might be something else. I don't know. I'm in that sort of phase right now where I've got so many ideas, I'm not really sure which one to do next. But I do. This week, the next couple of weeks, well, probably this week I'll write it and next week I'll edit it. Short story based around the theme of fear. And I went to an exhibition on the sunken Egypt, which I will be basing the story around. So that's very cool. And I also came home last night after a weekend in London, and you know, I said to my husband, but apparently this film Deadpool is very good. So we watched it and it is really funny, quite violent. So not if you're into violent stuff, but it does, you know, in terms of the screenplay and the superhero tropes, it just, you know, it's very funny. So yeah, so that's good comic relief. What else? Okay. Oh, a couple of podcasts. First of all, if you like crime and mystery books, check out itsamysterypodcast.com. I was on there this week talking about Desecration and my London psychic mysteries, and the host, Alexandra, who is also my wonderful virtual assistant, has lots of interviews with mystery authors, and she's Canadian, so she has a lovely voice and relaxing manner. So check that out. It's a mysterypodcast.com. Also, I've mentioned before that I love the Tim Ferriss Show podcast, and you know, if anyone is like me into AI, virtual reality, future stuff, then listen to the interview with Kevin Kelly, which went out on the 5th of June. And it's based around his new book, which is called The Inevitable. And it is about the technologies that are coming in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Really fascinating stuff. I find it fascinating. And if you're scared about the future, then it's also a good interview to listen to, because Kevin is very, he's just one of these guys who you just listen to and go, oh yeah, everything's going to be all right. Now, I may be a Pollyanna in this situation, but I prefer to think positive. So yes, that interview with Kevin Kelly on The Inevitable. Now, in publishing news, Amazon this week announced expansion in India with a $3 billion investment, which should worry Flipkart and also Snapdeal, which are local e-commerce sites. Now, obviously, Amazon's expansion doesn't directly relate to Amazon KDP or Amazon Publishing in India, but what it does show is that Amazon is seeing the growth of e-commerce in India and the move into cell phones, and it is quite a cultural shift. I mean, if you look at when we went through that cultural shift, you know, moving from buying things in a physical shop to buying things online, it's a massive shift. Also, in a sort of when people don't necessarily have credit cards, things have to change around payment systems. It is a revolution. So I'm very excited about that. I think it's a big deal. I was also on a TV show on Friday night. Now, I thought I was just going into a little studio and on some small web show. But actually, I was on ZTV, on the Z Companion inspirational Friday night show. And it turns out that ZTV is actually the world's largest South Asian TV network with over 950 million viewers. Actually is, you know, like a full-on network with all kinds of programming. And so I did an hour's interview with the lovely hostess Natasha, who was very glamorous, and I think it went well. We had callers and I talked about, you know, writing books, and thanks to those Indian listeners who emailed me to say that it went okay. So that was exciting. So thanks as ever for your emails and tweets. I've had a lovely batch this week, and it does mean so much to me when I hear from people about, you know, helping them in some way. So thanks especially to L.E. Thomas, who sent me a really lovely email this week, which I've printed out and stuck in my diary, L.E. So thank you. L.E. says, this is just an excerpt from the email. My life was forever changed in September 2014. As fate would have it, I happened to find your podcast and nothing has ever been the same. Last October, I was able to leave a career I hated for nearly 15 years. You made it possible. I have always wanted to write for a living and woke up to write between 4 and 6 a.m. every single day while working 2 to 3 jobs. Now, L.E., thanks so much for thanking me, but actually you did the work. So although I'm, you know, aware that some people hear about self-publishing and the possibility of making a living through this show and through my books, and I'm so thrilled about that, you still have to do the work. So I'm thrilled that LE took the plunge there, writing every morning before working hard. And you know, when people, in fact, they asked me on this Indian TV show, so what do you say to people who say they don't have time? And I'm like, well, you know, how much do you want this? If you really want this, you'll make the time, you know, whether you have to give up some sleep, whether you give up your TV shows, whether you give up another hobby, you know, we all have the same amount of time. So if you really want it, you will take action. Other tweets. Josie Troyan says, caught up on the podcast today while the little ones fed their creative minds reading books. And thanks to Marielle Smith, who sent me a picture from the Herm Cemetery on the Channel Islands, and also to Serena, who sent me a picture of the cemetery in Charleston, South Carolina, where I've actually been. And thank you both, Marielle and Serena. I always appreciate people sending me pictures from cemeteries because you know I like them. Claire Jennings, running on Jekyll Island, listening to the show. Beautiful island picture there. Dina B says, listen, just re-listened to the Michael Brent Collings episode. So many gold nuggets there on process and balancing research and writing. Yes, and I do love Michael Brent. I will definitely have him back on the show next year. He is a superstar. Amy Hopkins says, cramming in a podcast while whipping up a writing snack. And Shane Slager or Slager says, I created my very first colouring book while listening to and helped very much by your podcast. Jamie Arpin-Riki said, listen to the show while walking around the very wide Winnipeg River in Canada. And Neil the Roden says, just finished listening to Business for Authors. Worried I may now be addicted to Joanna's voice.
Thank you so much, Neil. And you might be interested to know, I will be recording the mindset book, and although I will be selling that direct from my site because the ACX royalties have just become kind of crazy. Okay, so thanks as ever for your emails and comments and tweets. And there were lots more this week, but I just picked a few of them. Thank you again. And I love getting them. So please keep sending them. You can email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, or tweet me at The Creative Pen on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/The Creative Pen. So that's all fun. And if you enjoy cemeteries and graveyards, I'm also on Facebook for JF Pen Author, where I share a lot of my research pictures. So as ever, I enjoy the interaction we have on the show and appreciate you getting in touch. I love our conversation now. Actually, I was also interviewed on a Patreon podcast, and I'll come back to Patreon in a minute. But and they actually asked me, you know, what have you changed on the show over the years that makes that's kept you interested? And I said, well, you know, about, I think it was a year ago or 18 months ago, I started, you know, I started asking you guys to email me and tweet me things and sharing them in this segment of the show, and it makes such a difference to me. I just get feedback. Well, not even feedback, just your comments. To know that you're real people listening just means a lot. So thank you again. So today's episode is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and you'll hear a word from our sponsor in a minute. And just to mention again that Kobo was 24% of my book sales income for the last tax year, and I grow that by consistently promoting my books to Kobo customers, and, you know, having the links to Kobo on my book sales pages, and I apply for merchandising, and I do get knocked back quite a bit, but I also get some merchandising, so that's very cool. So it is possible to break free of an Amazon-only income stream for books. And you all know that I consider multiple streams of income to be the healthiest approach for the long term. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And thanks especially to new patron Michael Kowal. I really do appreciate the Patreon support, and really indicates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. On Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars, even a dollar per show, to a maximum of 2 per month, so less than a coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will be recording this week for June. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And if you are a Patreon supporter, please go into the special link you have to ask your questions so I can record a nice Q&A show for you. Okay, thank you. Here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get into the interview.
Hi, this is Mark Lefebvre. I'm the director of self-publishing and author relations for Kobo, and we are very, very excited to be a sponsor of the Creative Pen podcast. Something I wanted to share with Creative Pen listeners is the fact that via Kobo Writing Life, you can set your book to free at any time for as long as you want. There's no exclusivity requests. I would advise authors, though, who are looking to set their book to free, to think about it as part of a strategy. What is your goal to set it for free? Are you looking for more readers? Are you trying to garner reviews? Or are you using this as a funnel to get people into your catalog? Come to KoboWritingLife.com, where we discuss such things, and check out the Kobo Writing Life podcast, which is also linkable from the blog. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
And today I'm here with Claire Lydon. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Joanna. Lovely to be here.
Oh, great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Claire is a London-based writer of contemporary lesbian romance, as well as the host of the Lesbian Book Club. And today we're talking about writing lesbian fiction. But Claire, just before we get into it, tell us a bit more about you and your writing background.
Okay, well, I worked for nearly 8 years as a journalist and editor in magazines. So I worked on design magazines, football magazines, food magazines, and gaming magazines. So I know more about gaming than I ever really wanted to know, because I'm not a gamer. And I worked for Man U and Chelsea magazines, and being a Tottenham fan, that's very bad. And then I was a music journalist online for 6 years, where I interviewed pop stars and went to gigs and lived my smash hits dream.
cool. Who was the best band you ever interviewed?
Oh, God, everyone always asked me this, and I never remember when I was doing it. So I interviewed Bruno Mars 4 times, which I thought was, you know, by the 4th time I was like, all right, Bruno. He's like, all right. You know, I think the nicest pop star was Tom from Keane. And I was a big Keane fan as well. So, and got to go to, you know, lots of private shows and things. So it was pretty cool. I did live my smash hit dream. I did also once sit in a room with Kanye West.
Ooh.
And he, while we were listening to his album, it was about sort of 50 journalists, and he sat on a stage and watched us all and chastise people if they weren't sort of, you know, nodding along very well. So,
okay, good.
And then I ran Vodafone Music for a couple of years and their editorial team for the UK and Europe. And then they made me redundant, which is when I thought, they gave me a chunk of money. And I thought, you know, hey, why not dig that book out that I've been writing for the last 3 years and see if I can do something with it? Now, I didn't really know much about lesbian romance at that point. I read my first lesbian romance when I was on when I was traveling around the world in 2003. I found it in a hostel in New Zealand in one of their sharing libraries. But I don't think I came across another book for about 5 years. And then I started reading it, and all the stuff I read was very US set. So I thought, hey, I could do this, but I could set it in the UK. And there were UK set ones, but I hadn't seen them. I didn't read them. I was reading more print books at the time. And so I had a book offer it, and I thought, I've got the money. I'll take a year out. I'll see if I can do it. So I finished it actually while I was still at work, because they sacked my boss first. So I had 3 months of working. So they paid me to finish my book. And then I wrote the next one in the next 4 months. And then I sort of dilly-dallied a bit. And then I went to a lesbian fiction, lesbian arts festival. And I spoke to some people there. And I'd already sent it off to a lesbian publisher at that point. Mm. There are none in the UK. Or there weren't in 2013 anyway. So I sent it off to one of 5 big ones in the US. They all begin with B for some reason. And they said, hey, it will take 3 months. And I thought, oh, great. And they sent me a rejection letter on Christmas Day, which I thought was really nice of them, and covered in red pen. And they kind of said, it's good, but it needs some work. So I went to this arts festival and I met UK lesbian fiction authors, and they were all self-published, and they were all very encouraging, and they all helped me out a lot along the way. And it was their encouragement and advice. 4 months later, I published in March 2014. And yeah, haven't looked back since. I've done 4 novels and 2 novellas in that 2 years, and I've got 2 novellas and 2 novels coming out this year, unless I, you know, conk out from overwork. It's going well. I mean, the first book, I launched it, and it was called London Calling, and it was a story of a modern lesbian in London town, and it flew off the shelf straight away, much to my surprise. So
And how autobiographical is that first novel?
You know,
is she a music journalist?
Yeah, she's not, so that's good, isn't it? She hasn't interviewed Bruno Mars. I think there were bits of me in it, but not super duper autobiographical. If I was as stupid as Jess, my lead character, I'd be a bit upset with myself, I think. But she does drink a lot of tequila, and I have been known to do that. And she just sort of kind of bumbles along and gets into some quite bad scrapes. So it's a funny, humorous look at the modern lesbian in London.
Yeah, which is fantastic. We'll come back to humour, because I do want to ask you about that. But I want to get into the genre, because I heard you mention les fic on your podcast, which made me smile, because that's just so brilliant. So can you tell us a bit about the sub-genres of lesbian fiction? Because obviously it's not just one thing. You know, I'm thinking, is there a sci-fi lesbian fiction subgenre, that type of thing?
Is the short answer. Yes. So your dreams can come true. Lesbic is just shortening of lesbian fiction. And yes, it has many genres. Romance is the most popular, as you might expect. Mystery thriller, also very popular, because a lesbian detective has been a stalwart of lesbian fiction since the dawn of time. Sci-fi is pretty big. supernatural, historical fiction, and YA and NA are also very popular. I think that's they're popular generally as well, aren't they? So whatever is popular in the mainstream will probably be mirrored in the world of lesbian fiction. New adult in the last couple of years have been huge, and young adult as well, because that typically is sort of coming out, coming of age. And while coming out stories have lessened, because people don't, it's not such a big deal anymore, which is great, but they're still around. So, yeah, so that's a really popular genre. And also erotica too is popular.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, isn't it? Because just because it's a lesbian book with a lesbian character doesn't mean it's erotica. And some people might be expecting that.
They might be very disappointed. I mean, my books do always have a sex scene or two in them, but not every lesbian romance does, and not every lesbian fiction book has. In fact, quite a lot of them don't. So if it's just sex, you won't go for erotica, as in most things.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm interested there in the idea of coming out and the young adult, new adult thing, because obviously in the West, in the UK, I mean, less so in the fundamentalist Christian US, I imagine. But I mean, if we're talking about a global publishing market where, say, in, I think, I won't name any countries, but there are some countries where it can be very dangerous to be gay in any manner. So do you think that those markets, there are new voices emerging, or that these types of books will help people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think definitely that I know another lesbian fiction author has told me she gets a lot of correspondence from people just coming out. And I think because she wrote a book about a student falling in love with a teacher, so it's kind of deals with young adult stuff. And I think there are many like since the advent of the Kindle and digital publishing, as with all stuff, that there's been a huge explosion of lesbian fiction probably since about 2012, and so there are more and more authors constantly coming on to the market, which is great. And I'm sure that there'll be more and more authors now in all different countries telling their experience as well. Obviously, the ones that dominate are UK and US voices. I mean, most stuff is set in the US, so it's mainly US voices that dominate. But of course, there's a lot of places there where it's still not okay to be gay. So they still tell the coming out stories and the difficulties of that.
And just kind of taking that further, is it, you know, there are a lot of political agendas, I guess. I mean, for example, just the marriage, books that portray a marriage for lesbians and gay people. Is that something that people tackle in an issue manner, or do people put that within the books just as part of the story?
I think both, really. My books tend to be happy. So I tend to have it as part of the story. And there will be angst about it, you know, like family reactions to marriage, because that's something that's happened since marriage has become legal, is that a lot of people have said, oh God, you know, coming out as telling your parents you're going to get married is like coming out again, because it's another hurdle. And I think that's reflected in some of the fiction. But yeah, I mean, issues are definitely dealt with in lesbian fiction, and issues like domestic violence and marriage and coming out and you know, basic societal issues. And I've got to say as well, there's mainstream lesbian fiction as well. So literary fiction, I mean, so like Sarah Waters and Jeanette Winston and some of her books.
Yeah, so, and that's interesting, because I believe, I don't know about Sarah Winters, but Jeanette Winterson is a lesbian. Is that correct? Yeah. So that was one of my other questions, is what does lesbian fiction define itself by the orientation of the character, or also by the orientation of the author? Because, you know, this, where are the lines drawn, I guess?
Lesbian fiction is characterised by having lesbians as your main characters, not side characters. That's it. Anyone can write lesbian fiction. The sexual orientation of the writer is irrelevant, because you're making things up. So essentially, anyone can do it. I am a lesbian. I'm writing lesbian fiction, but you don't have to be a lesbian to write lesbian fiction. As long as the lead characters are lesbians, then and the lesbian voice is heard, then absolutely you can. I mean, I don't know the the percentage of lesbian fiction that is written by women or lesbians. I know gay romance is mainly read by women, and I heard a stat recently that over 50% is now written by women. So, and I think maybe possibly more than that. So there's a huge market there, and women are writing a lot of it. Some people are uncomfortable that lesbian stories are being written by non-lesbians.
Well, that's what I was wondering about.
But it's just the human experience, really, isn't it? And anyone can have a go at that, you know? And I think as long as you're not hiding it, because there was some controversy a couple of years ago when I first started about some people writing lesbian fiction pretending to be lesbians when they were actually men. And I think that's when people get annoyed about it, and understandably. So just be honest about who you are. And because I've read lesbian fiction by men and it's been good. So.
Well, I think that's the point, isn't it? I mean, especially when, let's face it, we're all just human. And, you know, if we write, like I've written a Nigerian Swedish man, you know, I have lesbians in my book, but they're not the main character. So that wouldn't be lesbian fiction. But I'm interested also with someone like Val McDermott, who is one of Britain's best loved, well-known crime writers, who does have lesbian characters, but I don't think any of them are the protagonists. So where would she fall in the spectrum?
I haven't read any Val McDermott because I'm not a crime fan. So
too dark for you.
Yeah, I like happy books. I just did my podcast today, and I do a rundown of the Amazon lesbian fiction charts for the US and the UK as a starting point of that. And I saw that Val McDermott was in the charts today, and I've never seen her in the charts in the top 20s in the US and UK. So that was interesting. I would say if you haven't got, maybe if you have like a lot of secondary characters, you could also be.
And or if you are a famous lesbian.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe she gets away with it because she is a famous lesbian. So yeah. There you go. Maybe they make an exception for her. Come on, pal. Interestingly, that non-lesbian authors, there was the Goldie Awards are the biggest lesbian fiction awards. It's the Golden Crown Literary Society. And in 2015, they had their first transgender female to male, they gave a Goldie to a transgender male writing an anthology of lesbian fiction. So I think that was the first time that they'd given it out to somebody who...
That is slightly confusing. And I hope everyone's okay with me saying that. So, but that is quite interesting, isn't it? And I think that's so important. And this week, was it this week or last week, we had a described as non-binary person come out to President Obama while he was in London. She got up and said, you know, I'm not on either scale. And obviously gender is different to sexual orientation as well, which can complicate things. But I think what's so great is that we do have all of these different spectrums, and we're all obviously have different mindsets about it too, like you said about the readers. So what you mentioned a little bit about readers, but who are the readers of your lesbian fiction and others, you know, other authors, you know?
Well, I think majority, as you would expect, are lesbians, but not as men. Not people think that lesbian fiction is only read by lesbians. It's not true. Just like any book, anybody can read it. And once you write it, you cannot control who reads it. And that's great. I like that. You know, obviously all my family read it, and they're all big lovers of lesbian fiction now. My dad read my first one of mine recently. That was interesting. But then, I think with my fourth book, my Christmas book, All I Want for Christmas, I started to get letters from a lot of men. So clearly, I don't know why, but men started to, maybe men love Christmas books. But I started to get a lot of letters from men. And I've always had male readers. And I don't think that's that surprising because, as I said, you know, women read gay fiction and men read lesbian fiction. It's not just, I have readers from straight women, gay women, straight men, and gay men. Gay men read a lot of lesbian fiction as well. So there's a lot of crossover. And I have heard one man said to me that it's a window on a world he'll never experience, and so he's interested in reading it. So that's an interesting take,
which is true of any book. I mean, isn't it? Really, that's kind of why a lot of the reasons we read is a window into that. I mean, I guess maybe I write darker things that I will never experience. And, you know, I guess, yeah, that's a really interesting thing. And, well, then also I was just thinking about the prizes. Well, is there a Polari Prize? Is that another one that's...
Yeah, there's a Polari Prize for first fiction, so your debut author, and that's every year. Polari is a literary salon that runs in the South Bank once a month, and that's pretty big. They get like, you know, 200-300 people once a month go, and I've read at Polari, and it's a really cool event. There's the Golden Crown Literary Society Awards, as I say, that's yearly. They have a conference every July in somewhere in America. It changes venue every year. And there's the Lambda Literary Awards, the Lammies to their mates, and that's LGBT. And then there's the Rainbow Awards, and that's online, sort of a jury of about 500 people all around the world read the books and vote, and that's LGBT.
Yes, super interesting. So then I wanted to know what are the things, if people want to include lesbian characters, which of course we should encourage everyone to include different characters who are not
everybody
like you.
Everybody should have one, yes.
Yeah, everyone should have a lesbian in their book. Just stick one in. But no, what are the stereotypes that drive you nuts about how lesbians are portrayed in books and film?
I think it's got a lot better, really. I think that most stuff I read these days doesn't wind me up any more than any other book, really. I think we've come on leaps and bounds, and that's reflected in society, the society we live in, as we said, anyway. You know, when I was growing up, I remember watching a documentary about some lesbians, and they were in a backyard, and they all had greased hair, and they would had dungarees, and they were doing up a motorbike, and I thought, oh god, I haven't got any dungarees, and I don't know anything about motorbikes, so but hooray, it's all come on now. I suppose things about being upset, or you know, the struggle, I mean, everybody does struggle because it's still not, you know, the societal norm, what's expected in of a way, but I like to be positive in my books and reflect to people that are happy with their sexuality, and it's just another facet of their being. It's not their whole being. You know, so we've come on a great leaps and bounds since, like, you know, The Well of Loneliness, Radcliffe Hall, which is a seminal lesbian text, but oh my God, it's depressing. So, you know, it's we've come on quite a long way since then.
Well, I guess a lot of earlier generations in the West, you know, potentially were unhappy because they might never have met the person that they really wanted to be with, or never were able to come out to their family. So perhaps that's why more of that is miserable. But if people are wanting, again, I think if people want to do any research, should they literally just read books like yours that feature lesbians, or are there things that they could read or watch that might give them an insight?
Well, I mean, there are obviously really big selling authors in all the different genres. I can give you some examples of those if you'd like.
That would be great.
So the one I first got into was Georgia Beers, and she's American, and she writes lesbian romance, very contemporary, cozy, I suppose, cozy lesbian romance. She's very good at it, and you know, all her books are great. Jerry Hill is another classic, who's quite reliable. She writes lesbian romance and lesbian mystery. Mystery cop drama things. And if you want a mystery kind of thriller, Carrie Hunter's very good. Her Dark Peak series is awesome. It's like if Scott and Bailey were lesbians and younger. Well, the older one was younger. And, you know, we've all thought about that. Was that just me? Sci-fi, Fletcher DeLancey's very good. Her Care for Non series is awesome, and she's been on my podcast, and she's very lovely. And she also met her wife, as her wife contacted her because she liked her writing. So and I've heard that happen quite a lot. I know a few authors who've met their partners because they met a reader. So so you know, that's a nice byproduct, isn't it?
That is.
And there are new authors coming out all the time. I read one last year, a debut author G. Benson wrote a book called All the Little Moments, and it was about a woman whose brother and his wife die in a car crash, and she's left with the guardianship of his kids. And it was just brilliantly written. I sobbed from about page one. I'm a sucker for a sob story. So, yeah, that was really, really good. But, yeah, and obviously mine.
Yes, obviously yours. And just tell people where they can find your podcast as well, in case people fancy the rundown.
I do a podcast once a month, and it's part of the Lesbian Lounge podcast. So it's my section of it is called the Lesbian Book Club. But if you search for the Lesbian Lounge on iTunes or Stitcher or Podbean, that should come up. And yeah, and then I've done 19 episodes now, so 19 months it's been running. People seem to like it, so that's good.
Yeah, that's very cool. So obviously, regardless of the gender or sexual orientation of the protagonists, you write romance, which I don't think is that different, regardless of who's going through it, to be honest. And you've got this latest series, All I Want. Tell us a bit about that, and what are the important story tropes of a romance, no matter who's in it?
Well, the All I Want series. So I first wrote, my first book is London Calling, and then I wrote a follow-up, which follows one of the secondary characters in her quest for a romance. And then the All I Want series is a bit different in that it has the two lead characters getting together in the first book, and then I'm following them as they progress in their romance in a calendar year. So I've had All I Want for Valentine's, All I Want for Spring, and there's going to be a summer, autumn, and then forever. So beautiful. See what I did there? So that's a little bit different because it's following two characters who already got together. So that probably flies in the face of what most people say romance should be, but I just thought I'd try it. It's something different. And people seem to like it, so that's good. But I suppose romance books generally should have the first tingle of love, some trepidation, dilemma, first kiss, first sex, if you're going to include that, first fight, and then commitment, betrayal, and then love conquers all and happy ever after, basically.
Yes.
Always a happy ever after.
And that's so funny you said that, because I don't know why I was looking at some romance books, because I don't really read romance, and I saw this has HEA in it, like in the sales description on Amazon.
Really?
It says, has HEA, and then I was like, what is HEA? And I had to Google it, and it's happily ever after. So there's like, what do they call that, urban slang? This book has HEA.
See, I've never heard that until I started writing romance, and I still didn't hear it till about a year in. So I don't think I'd know what it was if I was a reader reading a blurb. I'd be like, "What's that?"
That is so hardcore, isn't it? But that to me, like you just said about a weepy, like wanting a weepy, that's what I would say is a love story. So Nicholas Sparks, who is probably the most well-known man writing in a romantic genre, but I think Nicholas Sparks writes a love story because, you know, The Notebook in particular is that, you know, real weepy one, whereas your books are a romance because they have an HEA and it's not a weepy, right? So that's good.
No weepies yet, but never say never. I mean, with my second book, The Long Weekend, it's about a group of friends who go away to celebrate 20 years since they met at university. So, and one reviewer said it's like a lesbian Peter's Friends.
Oh, nice.
So I like that quote, yeah. So it's like an ensemble piece, and it wasn't a traditional happy ending. Like some people had a happy ending, some people didn't. Mm. And so that wasn't strictly romance. And so I think that confused some people because I put it in the romance category, but then it probably shouldn't have been in romance because then I probably took it out. Mm. But all my others have HEAs.
And I think that's super important. And I was at a literary festival this last weekend, and I was just thinking about the expectations of readers. And the chair of the panel I was on said that Mo Hayder, do you know Mo Hayder? She writes really dark crime. He said that Mo Hayder is a cozy writer. And I just went nuts on it and said, you can't call a writer like that a cozy writer. It's nothing to do with what you think as a critic, as a literary critic. It's what the reader thinks, isn't it? You have to fit in the category that the reader is expecting.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there are certain certain ones that are very popular in lesbian romance. I don't know if it's the same in straight romance. Or I don't read that much. But things like Friends to Lovers, that's a really popular one. And that's my All I Want for Christmas series. That's a Friends to Lovers one. And Second Chances, that's really popular. So, you know, meeting someone that you had a crush on, your first love again 20 years later. And the class thing is always a good one. Mm.
Is that the billionaire lesbian?
Yeah. No, I guess that's more a money one, like the class thing, like, you know, the upper class. And then Claire Ashton did a really good book called That Certain Something, and that was about a woman who like owned the magazine, or she was really high up in the magazine anyway. And then the sort of intern who was hired as a photographer, and they fell in love. And so there's a lot of class things in that. But with London Calling, I think I confused some of my readers, because I had the lead character, she falls in love with a woman she meets, but she also moves in with one of her best friends and sister-in-law, who happens to be a lesbian as well. And so my readers were confused, but I kind of did that to keep them guessing. Mm. But I think sometimes people like to know what's going to happen. And so that, you know, some people, I did get emails saying, I wish you got together with Kate. And I thought, oh, well.
Oh, the flatmate instead of
the flatmate.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's difficult. That's the thing, isn't it? And just on that class thing, that film Carol, that with Kate Blanchett, is that's a class sort of a literary romance with class,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. All of the above. Yeah. I mean, that is classic class sort of romance. And I've actually ordered that book because I haven't read it, the book, but I absolutely loved the film. I mean, it was so beautifully shot and well done. And Kate Blanchett is just fantastic in it, and Rooney Mara. But yes, that is an absolute classic. And I guess she would be a almost billionaire lesbian, but not with the rights, because it was in the 50s.
I love it. I do want to ask you about humour, because, and again, this has nothing to do with lesbian fiction, humour in general is one of those really tricky things, and I personally struggle with humour. So I wanted to ask you about that. How do you write humour? What are your tips for putting humour into a book?
I think all through my writing career, I've always done humour. My reviews of gigs were always humorous, and my blog posts were always humorous, and I've carried that through to my writing. I think humour is just all about the general things that are true with writing generally. So be specific. The humour is all about the detail. Mine down to the minute of it, and you'll always find humour in a lot of things. I mean, I think I'm not comparing myself in any way to the late great Victoria Wood, but she was an absolute master at that, wasn't she? Just getting to the absolute minutiae of day-to-day life and really making fun of it. And making fun of yourself is also a really funny thing. So having, if it's written in the first person, having the lead character make fun of themselves. For instance, I've got a thing in my All I Want for Spring book, and it's about the lead character gets on a Segway, and it's quite a...
Which is funny in itself.
It's funny, and she's not very good at it, and it's, you know, I've had a lot of comments about that section. And I actually did go on a Segway in Madrid for our anniversary, my wife and I's first anniversary. We went to Madrid, and for some reason I booked a Segway, and I think my friend told me it was a great way to see the city. It wasn't, she lied, and it was just two of the most excruciating hours of my life. But when I came back, I wrote it down in detail because I thought I could use that. And so I adapted it for the character. So pay attention to what's happening in your own life and what's going on around you. And also the way you write it can affect sort of comic timing. So shorter sentences create drama and create funny. Starting a new paragraph can have an impact. Yeah, just short sentences, like it's like the boom, boom, boom of the thing. And really, and just edit well. I mean, you're not going to get a funny joke every time on the first go. So edit well until edit into submission. And a lot of my humour is in dialogue. I like writing quippy, funny dialogue. Mm-hmm. So read it out loud and make sure it is and not just in your head. I like to include humour in all my books, and even the slightly darker ones. I don't really have dark books, but the slightly darker ones all have humour in them.
Yeah, and that's so important. And I know that I do have beats of lightness, but not humour. And it's one of those things. I'm always doing writing courses, and the course that I'm on at the moment, the exercise from last night, funny as we talk about this, was to write 500 words of a humorous opening to a book, and it was awful. I mean, I just sat here just going, oh my goodness. And I ended up drinking 2 glasses of wine before I could actually manage anything. It was truly shocking. So one of my goals is, like, I've just got to write, you know, you have to practice these things, don't you? If they're not one of your skills. But anyway.
Absolutely. And I think probably all my years as a journalist, I always tried to introduce humour. I remember writing a story, you know, on a really dry subject, and my editors used to send it back to me and say, well, what the hell is going on here, Claire? Why is this funny? Why is this a funny joke now?
You'd be like, yeah, no one's going to read it otherwise.
Yeah. So it's all coming into good stead now, right?
Mm. And what about your music background? Is that something that you bring into your books?
Not so far yet, but I am planning a story about a pop star who's pressured to stay in the closet because it's not the done thing to come out.
And that's Ricky Martin. It's so funny. I look at the, you know, because I had total crush on Ricky Martin when how old would I been, like 16 or something? And then it was, you look at videos now and go, how did we not know he was gay?
Michael, isn't it? I mean, God, you look back at the Club Tropicana video and you just think...
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? But yeah. No, anyway. And
we'll be in there for that.
Yeah, no, that is fun. And then I wondered about your tips on marketing. So if people are, I mean, obviously you've got a lesbian fiction podcast, so that's very targeted. But what are, and obviously categories... So using lesbian categories, what are your other sort of tips for marketing to the lesbian market?
Again, it's pretty similar to marketing books in general, but just mining down to know the market and know what people want. For instance, you know, if you're going to write a romance, make sure it's got HEA. Otherwise your books will be slammed. And romance readers tend to want happy, happy books, and they don't like people who are too annoying or mean. So don't write a mean character. Mm. And, you know, there are key sort of lesbian Facebook groups and forums. So get into those and, you know, get known. I tried, but I'm not very good at it. I'm just not very good at it. Facebook ads, I'm going to try those. I haven't tried them yet, but I did buy Mark Dawson's course, but I haven't done it yet. So I'm going to do that because I was waiting to have a few more books out. Mm. And obviously lesbian podcasts. So I do one, as you say, there's a couple of other ones. The Lesbian Review is a good review site, and they do a few different podcasts. The Girls Hour, The Girl Pond, The Cocktail Hour. There are a few out there, but there aren't that many that are lesbian fiction specific. So the market is still open. And then you've got all the, there's a lot of magazines. So magazines are dwindling because, you know, as all
they
gay
are
bars.
In general.
Magazines are dwindling in general, and the gay bars are shutting because people don't think you need gay bars anymore. It's all a cultural shift, a societal shift. But After Ellen is the key website, afterellen.com. And Curve magazine in the US, Diva magazine in the UK, there are key blogs. There's a channel on YouTube called, a website, and it's like a lesbian YouTube. Mm. And it's called One More Lesbian. So that's a good one to get on. Like, I've had book trailers featured on that, and they get quite a lot of views when you get them on there. So that's really cool. But, you know, it's like anything, just be yourself, be genuine. Don't try and be open to readers contacting you and reply to them. Don't ignore them. That's a good tip.
Yeah.
And video. I think video is very underused. I mean, I know I'm listening to your interview. Is it Michael Laron?
Michael Laron, yeah.
And I think he was saying the same thing overall, wasn't he? And it's a very underused medium. And I think if you can do videos, I have done a video. I got a friend of mine to do it, and I did a day in the life of an author, and it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek me watching Come Dine With Me and eating pot noodles and then going to the pub. So, and that got a lot of hits. So I think if you can do videos with humour, there's a lesbian fiction author, UK one, called Kiki Archer, and she does a video series called Lesbian Living, and it's just little funny 2-3 minute shorts, and she does really well with those. So I think I'm always thinking I should do more video as well.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? Because I think everyone's always interested in anyone's life. You know, it's actually not that you're a lesbian or that you're a writer or, you know, that you're in London. It's kind of, well, it's all those things. And these are the things that are our daily life. But actually, people on the other side of the world might find them super interesting, you know. It's kind of weird. Like I last saw you briefly at the London Book Fair, and you know, we just did a really short, like 1 minute video of it. And because people don't, if they haven't been, they don't know what it's like. So, you know, I think it's the same. I haven't actually done like a tour of my house or anything. Is that what you mean?
You should absolutely do that. We need to see your husband. We never see his face. See, he's all this mythical.
He was at the London Book Fair.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, where's your wife? Come on.
She's at work. Somebody's got to be.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Okay, and then also on marketing, I also wanted to ask you about cover design, because I remember for the first time I met you, I was very rude to you, which is terrible. You showed me a picture of your book cover, and I think it was on a business card, or was it the actual book? Anyway, and it's this lovely...
It was a postcard.
Yeah, it was a postcard, and it was this lovely London skyline, and I was like, oh yeah, it looks like a literary fiction kind of novel. Really nice cover. And then you said it was a lesbian book, and I was like, it doesn't look like a lesbian book. There's no women on the front. So I wondered what your thoughts are on branding for lesbian fiction, and how have you changed your current books?
It's still a question I can't answer fully. Mm. I think when I first started, like you say, I made classic mistakes. I didn't know anything about, I just published the book and I did a cover that I liked. So,
It is lovely.
Yeah. And I did a cover that I liked, and I did the same for the second book. And what I found was that I clearly like graphics and typography, and yeah, like sort of, they look like nice literary fiction or travel books. And so I did make those mistakes. But having said that, they both sold pretty well. And I, you know, the London Calling cover, the first one, it came second in the Rainbow Awards for best cover of the year.
Oh, fantastic.
and loads of people said how much they love the cover. So I am still thinking about changing it, but it's kind of, you know, it's on my to-do list. But so what is the best cover? Like a lot of people would think it would be two women on the cover for lesbian romance. But I had a look, like when I was looking at the charts today, of the 20 there were only three with two women in the top 20 on the charts. Having a woman or a body part or some sort, like a face or a body part, that sounds bad, doesn't it?
A severed leg.
Not one of those body parts. So like a face or, you know, some people put like sort of the bum of the jean, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, that sounds bad, or hands held together or something like that. I think having a body part of some sort, a face is a good one to have on there. And I think I will maybe try out and see if it changes anything. But I did for my book three, so for London Calling's follow-up, I put a picture of two women nearly kissing on the cover. And that sold well, but still my biggest seller and the one that continues to sell the best is London Calling, the first one with the London cover on it. So it's a conundrum.
And how well does that book sell in America? Do you notice the difference between the UK and the US?
They're fairly even. I sell slightly more in the UK, but they're fairly even. It's really a couple of percentage difference, volume wise. So Yeah, and then for my All I Want series, so All I Want for Christmas, I decided to go down more down the sort of lesbian romance chick lit route, and so I put a woman on the cover, but a graphic woman. So a graphical woman, not a graphic woman.
Yeah, you're really struggling with this bit.
I know.
But yeah, people can go and look at the books of Claire Lydon.
So that's going to be sort of, that series is very branded and it's very different. So we'll see how, and that seems to be going down pretty well. I think for my next book, I am going to go try something a bit different maybe, but keep my author branding, so my name at the top. But I may well go, I think I will go down the route of two women again and see, but I don't notice a discernible difference in the sales. So it's a conundrum.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with cover design, of course, is you can't split test it anyway. So, you know, you can't ever know, because even if you put a different cover on a different book, it doesn't compare to the, you know, the one you had. So that's, it's very a difficult choice. But no, it's fascinating, really interesting that. Okay, so I think we are pretty much out of time. That's been super interesting. So where can people find you and all your books online?
So you can go to clarelydon.co.uk. That's C-L-A-R-E-L-Y-D-O-N. I'm on Twitter, at Claire Lydon. I'm probably best at Twitter. Facebook is Claire Lydon Author. I'm on Instagram at Claire Fick. And I should be on Pinterest more, but I'm not. But you know, you can pin something if you like. I might see it in a couple of months. probably for Facebook and Twitter are the ones I'm most on.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Claire. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.